This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
We all love a legendary comeback, and Degree Original Cool Rush is back and better than ever. Cool Rush isn't just a scent. It's a movement, a fan favorite that delivers bold, fresh vibes and all-day sweat protection. Whether you have a man that spends hours in the gym, heads into the office early, or is just trying to stay fresh on a long day, Cool Rush has their back. Head to your local Walmart or Target and grab Degree Cool Rush, the fan favorite scent from the world's number one antiperspirant brand.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. Hope you're having a fantastic weekend. It's going to end up great because we're responsible for it. Coming up on this show, Elise Stefanik's going to be with us. Is she going to run for governor of New York? Would she win? We're going to look at the polls and find out what she's up to. Jack Cittarelli wants to be the next governor of New Jersey. How close is he to making this upset happen? And Andrew Colvin, when you talk about turning point and the future, he represents it in so many ways. But first, the most impactful monologue in America. First off, it's so clear to me how successful President Trump's week-long trip on the Far East was, from Malaysia to Japan and South Korea, capped it off with a high-stakes two-hour session with the president of China. I'm also amazed how many don't see it that way. So let's review for them. Great enthusiasm in Malaysia. And it wasn't just dancing. They also had a rare earth deal that they signed, and it's going to really help within the next 3 months. You saw genuine affection when it comes to the new leader of Japan.
Mr. President succeeded in securing a ceasefire deal between Thailand and Cambodia and contributed to ensuring peace in Asia. Also, the deal you have recently achieved in the Middle East.
On behalf of our country, I want to just let you know, anytime you have any question, any doubt, anything you want, any favors you need, anything I can do to help Japan, we will be there. We are an ally at the strongest level.
And it was great to see that instant synergy between the two leaders. If I don't know if you caught the military, where she came down and addressed the military with the President of the United States. Japan, by the way, inked their trade deal and detailed a $500 billion investment into America. And the tension between Trump and South Korea's president that was so present in the first term was converted to respect with this leader and a finalized trade deal in this term, and also a pledge to spend on their own defense, which is a relief. And, by the way, they also gave him a crown. I mean it, a crown.
The Cheongmansong Gold Crown symbolizes the divine connection between the authority of the heavens and sovereignty on earth. That symbolizes the spirit of Silla, which brought peace to the Korean Peninsula for the first time, and the opening of the golden age of the Korea-U.S. alliance.
That'll go good in that library that George Stephanopoulos paid a lot for. Meanwhile, Trump made legitimate, tangible gains. The main event was always going to be with China. You had both sides. They seemed anxious to bring down the tension, bring down the tariffs, and amp up the trade.
Mr. President, you care a lot about world peace, and you're very enthusiastic about settling various regional hotspot issues.
It was amazing how cordial it was. And by the way, deals were made.
The Chinese have agreed to buy 12 million metric tons of soybeans during this season. And then for the next 3 years, they're going to be buying a minimum a minimum of 25 million metric tons per annum.
Overall, I guess on the scale of from 0 to 10, with 10 being the best, I would say the meeting was a 12.
So why were there such gains, in my view? Simple. Weeks of meetings leading up to the trip. It made Trump become the closer instead of the guy who had to set the table, write the deal, and finish the deal. But yet Democrats are just incapable of acknowledging any success. At this point, it's almost a medical condition.
It appears to most reasonable observers that Donald Trump was punked on the world stage by the Chinese Communist Party.
But so far, his trip has been a total dud.
Now they have this meeting of equals. Trump said she is a great leader. China is a powerful country. That's exactly what she wants and China wants. And so that headline is basically giving the message to the Chinese people, the United States and China are equal powers negotiating the world. And so that hurts us a little bit.
All Trump is talking about is the economy, not his, our economy. He's not doing this for him. He doesn't need another hotel or a golf club. This isn't ceremony to build up his ego. He builds on his relationships. He cuts deals, deal after deal with nation after nation. Remember his first overseas sojourn in the Middle East?
Yesterday, the Saudis pulled out all the stops in welcoming President Trump, who emerged with what he says is about $600 billion, maybe even a trillion, in Saudi investments.
So he's addressing our vulnerabilities, such as rare earth metals. We need them. By using our assets, like stuff we have, like AI, we're great. Military hardware, we're the best. And he's making relations pay off. I'll give you an example. So when the Gulf states came together with the United States to bring a ceasefire to Gaza, I mean, what a mess here. We had to end the fighting. Well, everybody combined. It shocked the world. The hostages were free. The ceasefire took place. Why? There was a mutual trust between the Gulf states and Trump.
Mr. President, today we welcome you here to thank you for your pivotal leadership in putting forward a proposal that got the backing of almost the entire world. Trump is the greatest friend that the state of Israel has ever had in the White House.
Just take note. He could be the best friend to Israel and be respected in the Arab world where he does multiple deals. Trump's doing these deals for the country. He's addressing our weaknesses. He's cleaning up the drug trade in our hemisphere. He's rattling our enemies in the region like Venezuela and Colombia. Not for him, but for us. But focusing on deals overseas, by doing that, he's addressing our economic needs at home. Even if the Democrats choose not to see it, perhaps they're just afraid to acknowledge it with an off-year election days away. Joining us now to break it down, Fox News contributor, a man that knows a lot about foreign trips and when people try to minimize it. He's the former deputy chief of staff for George W. Bush, Fox News contributor, Wall Street Journal columnist Karl Rove. Karl, were you surprised at how angry the Democrats seemed to be while the president was overseas?
Not really, but they were very angry. Look, they've been perpetually angry since November of last year, and they are angry at Trump, but they really ought to be as angry about themselves because they are so focused on being against him that they can't figure out what they're for. And as a result, the Democratic Party is now held in lower esteem than it has in, you know, some 40-some-odd years, and it's going to be hard for them to get out of it if they keep up this mindset.
Yeah, I mean, just some of the things that were pulled off. It wasn't a perfect trip. He didn't get everything he wanted. Would I have loved to him to push to level off the oil that he's buying from Russia? Absolutely. Well, you know, would I love for them to tamp down what they're doing in Taiwan and rattling the neighbors? Absolutely. But this is what he did get. U.S. cut in fentanyl. They said they'll pursue a cut in fentanyl. They could do that now. So he said he cut some on the tariffs. Total tariffs on most goods now at 47%. China agrees to cooperate when it comes to fentanyl. China pauses rare earth controls for at least a year. We agree to purchase soybeans, as you heard, reciprocal suspension of shipping levies. U.S. postpones a rule to prohibit blacklisting additional Chinese subsidiaries. Listen, China is strong, but they are vulnerable, and we are vulnerable when it comes to rare earth. We got to find a way in a Manhattan Project warp speed way to fill that gap, or we're always going to be over a barrel with them.
Yeah, and look, let's remember that specific provision with China is for 1 year. And that's why the agreement with the Australians on rare earth, that's why green-lighting the development of, we call them rare earths, but they're pretty common, and we have lots of them in the United States. Ukraine has a lot of them. There are a lot in, for example, in the Nordic countries. But we've got to develop our own resources, and the difficult thing there is the cost and the expense of building the facilities to refine those substances into usable items. But we got 1 year. Look, I think you need to look at this maybe a little from a different perspective. China is here. The rest of the deals are here. The rest of the deals are likely to be fulfilled and are based around the principle of reciprocity. I take three lessons away from that. One is the president has an excellent team in the Secretary of the Treasury, the Secretary of Commerce, the trade representative, and in some instances, it's necessary to bring in the Secretary of State. And all four of those people have done an extraordinary job in executing the president's plan. Second of all, reciprocity. The president is putting an emphasis on you treat us nice and we'll treat you nice. You lower your tariffs and your barriers, we'll lower ours. And I think that's moving to our mutual advantage. And third of all, he is treating these people and their countries as true partners and equals, which means there are benefits. As he said to the Japanese prime minister, let me know what you need. But he's also saying you got to do your part. The South Koreans of the three countries we talked about, Japan's doing what it needs to do on defense. Malaysia is not as important a national security partner. But South Korea has not been doing its job in muscling up its defenses. The president got them to agree to do that, and I thought that was an extraordinary achievement.
I want to get to this other point, too, and that is looking back at the 4 years of Joe Biden. People say, why are you looking back? Well, they keep writing books, and then people keep getting revelations about what we were talking about, and that is Joe Biden seemingly failing on the world stage and invisible when it comes to governing. Ian Sams, who would scream to the heavens every time he came out as President Biden's spokesperson, how on top of it he is, how with it and how sharp Joe Biden is. Behind closed doors, he had a different story. Listen to this.
That's the President Biden that so many of us experience every single day. Someone who's asking the tough questions so that we as staff can be sharp to do our job best for the American people.
I think I met with the president a handful of times during my tenure in the White House.
And one of those times was by Zoom when he was at Camp David. Carl, this is a big story nobody wanted to cover and wants to cover. Your thoughts?
We knew that they weren't telling us the truth. Who were we going to believe, them or our lying eyes? And we believed what we saw. And the American people had these grave doubts. And it now turns out that he was surrounded not only by a group of people who were hiding the truth from us, but he was also surrounded by people who lied to us. And you've just heard from one of them.
Right. We had this with Woodrow Wilson for 17 months. He had a stroke. No one saw him, heard from him, and his wife was running the country. We swore that would never happen again. It happened, but maybe for 4 years. This story is just beginning. We're not going to stop. Carl, thanks so much.
You bet.
I do not agree with many of his views, but running a state government or a city government is very different. It's about making sure that the garbage gets picked up, the streets are safe.
Really? New York, a lot of mayors say it's a little bit more complicated than that. New York Governor Kathy Hochul making a political calculation, supporting the front runner to be the next mayor of New York City, Zohreh Mamdani. Keep in mind, he failed to return the favor, offering no endorsement of her. Her support means this. She endorses, I guess, higher taxes. She endorses doubling the minimum wage, $30. She wants to freeze the rent. Sorry, landlords. And will spend about $600 billion making buses fast and free. But the high-profile Hochul endorsement coming with no shortage of embarrassments.
I need something. Here's what we need. Oh, you're fired up. You're fired up.
I thought they were saying, let's go, Bills.
Your friend and mine in attendance, Governor Kathy Hochul. Governor, thank you so much for being here. And thank you to your team, too, for getting us ready.
The governor of state New York, Kathy Hochul.
Governor Hochul, to the teams of New York, to the teams of the New York State Park.
They were just saying go Bills that whole time at the Ryder Cup. Other top Democrats waiting until the last minute to endorse Mamdani or just not endorse at all. Clearly, they decided, and they can't decide if he is the future of the Democratic Party or not. Some pray he is not. Joining us now, New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who also is considering, more than considering, a run for governor herself. your thoughts about Governor Hochul's calculated decision to endorse Mondami, who says, I don't like capitalism, I'm a socialist.
Well, Kathy Hochul made that calculated decision because she has no support even within her own party. Because of her abysmal polling, she has bent the knee to this pro-Hamas, jihadist, anti-capitalist, defund the police candidate who is likely on the precipice of potentially winning the mayoral seat of the most important city, not just in the country, Brian, but in the world. The world is watching this. And Kathy Hochul put her own political future, which is being resuscitated, and yet they are never going to allow her. They chanted and heckled her, saying, tax the rich, tax the rich. So she will be forced to bend the knee. She owns all of these horrific positions that are out of touch with hardworking New Yorkers.
So you're considering running. You'll make a decision right after the off-year elections coming up next week. But look at the polls early. I give you the Manhattan Institute poll. You're winning by one. I mean, this is a red. Nobody thinks this is a red state. You're winning in two or three polls. You're up by one or down by one, and you haven't even started campaigning. What does that tell you?
That tells you that people in New York, no matter if you're a Republican, independent, or Democrat, enough is enough. We are the most unaffordable state in the nation because of single-party Democrat rule led by Kathy Hochul. We have a Democrat party that has bowed the knee to the defund the police movement, which is what Kathy Hochul did. There's not a single issue that she said she specifically disagrees with Mamdani, because they have taken over the Democrat party. Kathy Hochul is known as the worst governor in America. She is wildly unpopular, whether it's upstate, the city, or on Long Island. You're seeing those boos, and everybody knows they're not saying go Bills. They are heckling Hochul because she has a failed record. And the reality, Brian, is she's an accidental governor.
Because she was lieutenant governor when
exactly.
The scandal-ridden Governor Cuomo was told to hit the door, and now he's trying to be mayor, and people look at him as the last great hope, which is a scary statement. Why do you think you could do the job?
Well, I have a record of delivering results to my district. I flipped a district from Democrat to Republican. We win not just Republicans, but we win independents and a fair percentage of Democrats because I always put New Yorkers first. I also have a strong record when it comes to cutting taxes. I helped lead the negotiation to deliver the largest tax cut specifically for New Yorkers, raising the SALT cap in this one big, beautiful bill. I also have supported pro-energy. This is a governor who has banned fracking, causing energy prices to skyrocket. I have a pristine record when it comes to standing up for the police, and that is in stark contrast to Kathy Hochul, who brought us failed bail reform, putting criminals first.
If Zohran wins, does that make your job harder to win or easier?
Well, the reality is, whether Mamdani wins or not, Kathy Hochul has made her bed. She has bent the knee to this socialist who's a full-blown communist, and New Yorkers are never going to forgive her. He supports raising taxes on top of the already highest taxes we have. He supports defunding the police, abolishing private property, does not believe Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state,
right.
Is a raging anti-Semite.
You would think this guy's in single digits, but he's actually leading by double digits. So I personally believe, and many people do too, that the fact that we're looking at college reform across the country, especially in higher institutions, because of you. You took on the anti-Semitic behavior on campuses and realized the problem was so much worse. Now, the president's now telling all colleges to sign on to this reform, admissions reform, stop to considering race and gender, providing admissions data. We want to know who's coming in and are you trying to be politically correct? Campus free speech and protests. You better get it under control. Make sure it's not violent. Make sure it's not threatening, but allow conservatives to speak up, I guess, for example, and gender definitions. How about men and women? Tuition and finances. Some of these colleges are unaffordable. Maybe they should start justifying their payments. How do you feel about this reform?
Well, it's certainly one of the most important things that we're doing, and I've been proud to lead the effort holding higher education institutions accountable for their failure to combat anti-Semitism. You had riots, you had violence against Jewish students, and you've had universities that have focused on indoctrination and not education. We need to return to exceptional education, and I have a book coming out called Poisoned Ivies that will come out next April.
So I thought it was really interesting that came out this week. And we heard about international groups financing some of the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protests against Israel and against Jewish students. But some college president says Iran's behind it. Listen to this.
Things happened that I really believe were encouraged from Iran. It did not have the involvement of very many, if any, of our own students.
Not a large group, maybe 30-plus students or something. But they were looking, they were using the playbook that they had seen at Columbia and other places and were putting into, it was the same messaging. So it's more than social contagion, I think. I think they're organized networks as well.
Are they right?
They are absolutely right. You're seeing a flow of foreign dollars into our higher education system. We are working very hard in Congress to make sure that we're pushing back, that these are America First universities. And the way we do that is these are U.S. taxpayer funded. We should not be propping up anti-American ideals. That was Syracuse, Brian, in upstate New York, to have Iranian funding flowing in to foment this anti-Semitism on campus. It should never be accepted. And I think you can draw a direct line from what's happening at the college campuses to Zora Mamdani's rise.
Because that's pretty much the mindset that we saw going crazy on college campuses. And what about the hostages when they got out? They said Hamas knew exactly what was happening at Columbia while in the tunnels of Gaza. Think about that. I know you have. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, best of luck with your big decision announcement next week. We hope to have you back a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, off to a great start. Meanwhile, still ahead, Democrats in New Jersey are breaking ranks to support Jack Cittarelli for governor. Can he actually flip that blue state? Cittarelli joins us next with his closing argument. And by the way, be sure to catch me on stage. I know it seems like a far away, but it really isn't. February 14th, Fort Myers, Florida, History, Liberty, and Laughs streamed on Fox Nation. Don't move.
It's a good time, even if it takes all night. Pass that bottle around the campfire.
Hey. Welcome back. The New Jersey gubernatorial race has emerged as one of the hottest contests to watch this election cycle in this so-called off-year election. Early voting shows record turnout in the battle between Republican Jack Cittarelli and his Democratic opponent, Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill. Now, in 2021, Cittarelli came in within 3 points of becoming the next governor of the Garden State. Shocked everybody. They had to wait a while to get the final tally. And now the deeply blue state, which is becoming less blue, could be on the verge of turning red. In a sign of what may be to come, over a dozen elected Democrats have thrown their support behind Cittarelli, including four Democratic mayors. Polls show this red-hot race could be a squeaker that could all come down to voter turnout. With 2 days to go into the election, Jack Cittarelli has taken some time out for us. And let's welcome him now. Jack, great to see you. The real clear average, if you average all the polls, has Sherrill 48.7, you 45.3. Do you think that's accurate?
No, we think it's actually closer than that, Brian. And the one thing to keep in mind is, historically speaking, Republicans underpoll in New Jersey. And the other thing that you mentioned is when prominent Democrats are endorsing the Republican nominee, I think that's a very, very strong sign of what's going to end up happening Tuesday night. We're going to win this thing.
You know, it's interesting, too. You talk about turnout. We got some numbers, and of course, they're constantly updated. Early on, Republicans are up 11 in terms of turnout. Democrats down 2. Unaffiliated down 2. What are you looking for when you meet with your staff and the doors close and the shades are down? What numbers are you looking at?
We wanted to look first and foremost at the return for Republicans through the mail. Those ballots got mailed out the third week of September, and we've seen a greatest number ever of Republicans returning their vote-by-mail ballots. And now what we want to do here in the 9 days of early voting, and we've got 2 days to go, is that we're matching them man for man, woman for woman. Because if that's the case, when we go into Election Day, we're going to be in really great shape because we kill it on Election Day. So I like the position that we're in. We'll finish strong here over the last 4 days and, again, deliver a win for New Jersey.
So I thought this was interesting. I was watching The Daily Show the end of the night, and Zoran Mamdani, who you know is a favorite to now, it looks like, according to the polls, if they're right, to be the next mayor of New York, he pointed to New Jersey as a model when it comes to taxes. Listen.
What we found is talking about raising taxes on people who make $1 million, increasing it by just 2%, increasing the state's corporate tax rate to match that of the socialist utopia of New Jersey. These are things that are not just broadly popular. They also have precedence. And most importantly, though, you're not looking to do them in and of themselves. You're looking to do them to fund an affordability agenda that would transform quality of life for every New Yorker.
So he wants to mirror the taxes that you want to decrease or at very least freeze.
Hey, man, I'm hoping this guy doesn't win. But if he does, we're going to roll out the welcome mat in New Jersey, not only for individuals, but businesses, too, because here's what I plan on doing. We need to reduce the size and cost of a bloated, inefficient state government that's up 64% during the current governor's term, all of which supported by my opponent. When we reduce the size and cost of state government, I'm reducing taxes for individuals and businesses. So New Jersey is going to be more attractive than ever to New York individuals and businesses that want to flee.
Is it right to call you a moderate?
Hey, you know, I'm moderate on some issues. I'm liberal maybe on others. I'm conservative on others. I'm all about New Jersey. So I just want to make this place more affordable, make it a place where retirees feel comfortable. They can retire here. Young people feel they can get a start here. I've never worried much about labels. I'm a Jersey guy.
All right. So one of the hit pieces I wanted to bring back to Mikey Sherrill is running on you to give you a chance to respond. I can't and I shouldn't run the whole thing, but here's a little of it.
At the grocery store, or maybe at the gas station, locals call it the Jack Tax, a terrifying 10% tax on everything you buy.
So she thinks you're going to jack up taxes, Jack.
It's a bold lie, as is the entire campaign. It's been based on a stack of lies about me, her disdain for the president. She can fly a helicopter, none of which is going to fix New Jersey. I'm not raising any taxes. We've made that clear. And I've put forth very specific policy proposals to lower the income tax for individuals and businesses and also lower the property tax here in New Jersey.
I know you want to win. Do you think you're going to win?
I really do, Brian. I got to tell you. In 21, I thought I was going to win. You know how close that was. But this time feels very, very different. As I say, no matter where I go around the state, the energy is electric, the reception in minority communities. I didn't have a single endorsement of any Democrat, let alone prominent Democrats back in 21. This one is very, very different. We're in position.
I'll tell you what, if I didn't know how busy you were campaigning, I would think you took it easy. You look as fresh. You could go another 6 months campaigning. Jack Cittarelli, finish strong. Best of luck.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. Keep it right here on Fox. By the way, this Tuesday will be a full day. We're going to have election coverage. You're going to be glued to the TV, and I want it to be our TV. You're not going to get better coverage anywhere else. Meanwhile, on this show, coming up, the impact of Charlie Kirk's tragic death on Turning Point USA and how the organization will affect future elections. That'll be all coming your way next with Andrew Colvert. Played a big role in that organization, still does today.
Rough, dry eye.
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy says flight delays at airports are expected to get worse. This as the government shutdown stretches into its second month. Passengers in Los Angeles, Dallas, Boston, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., and New Jersey's Newark International Airport are experiencing 2 to 3 hour delays, and that is due to some air traffic controllers calling out sick because they haven't been getting paid. The delays come weeks ahead of the busy Thanksgiving travel season. Israel has received the bodies of what Hamas claims are 3 more deceased Israeli hostages. The handoff took place hours after Israel launched an airstrike in Gaza City. Israel claims Hamas is still operating pockets in areas under Israeli troop control. Hamas has released 20 Israeli hostage bodies since October 10th. 8 are still missing. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, back to One Nation.
A conservative awakening is taking hold of America's college campuses. I never actually thought I would say that, but it's inexplicable, and it's really fantastic to see. Since September 10, 2025, the movement Charlie Kirk founded has seen a surge unlike anything in its history. Turning Point USA now boasts over 3,000 new high schools and college chapters, more than 113,000 students officially joined in, another 130,000 expressing interest in becoming a part of the cause, a movement that continues to grow and inspire like at Ole Miss, where the meetings, the sessions, the events hit over 10,000 people, over capacity. Now, Kirk launched Turning Point in 2012, and his vision lives on. I would say that no one can disagree. Despite all that, some schools are pushing back. You got Loyola University in New Orleans. You got high schools like Royal Oak High in Michigan and Fort Lewis College in Colorado. Supporters say the resistance only fuels their resolve. So what does this momentum mean for the midterms, America's campuses, and the next wave of voters ready to make their mark? Are they poised? Yes. Joining us now is Turning Point USA spokesperson, executive producer of the Charlie Kirk Show, which he's hosting, Andrew Colvert. Welcome back, Andrew. Your thoughts about what has happened since we last spoke, and that was the day of the memorial service.
Yeah, I mean, the momentum has just continued to carry on, Brian. It's been amazing. I was actually at Ole Miss, and if you take that chapter as just one of many that are experiencing similar growth and an explosion of new members, that has 2,000 members at that Turning Point chapter, Brian, 2,000. And so, you know, you kind of mentioned the midterms. You mentioned about what kind of impact that can have on new voters. Well, when you have 2,000 members of a college campus chapter, that's going to have serious implications of local races and statewide races and the tone and tenor of the way that the politics in that state go. And yeah, you might say that's Mississippi, but we're seeing this in blue states. We're seeing this in swing states. It is an amazing phenomena. And yeah, right now, every day, we add 50 new chapters, whether that's college or high school chapters. It's about 50 new chapters a day. And most of those chapters have dozens of students that are starting them, whereas, you know, before 9-10, it might be like a core group of 4 or 5, maybe 10 or 12. But now we're having dozens and dozens for each chapter.
Andrew, what do you do when people try to open up a chapter like what happened at Royal High School, Royal Hill High School, or what happened at Loyola, and this college or high school says no? How do you help those people, or can you do anything to help them?
Yeah, no, we absolutely take a very active role in helping them. And I will tell you, Brian, there's been a lot of law firms that have come to our support to just give us pro bono aid and support for these brave students that do run into these roadblocks. And I will tell you right now, you know, there's a couple in progress, but we have not had one of these instances, Brian, where we didn't come out on top at the end and the school ends up finding a way forward for these students to start the chapter on campus. And yeah, there's a couple instances where we're still in process, but I have high hopes that we're going to get all of those students across the finish line.
And they should just know that that's what it's going to be like. When you go on campuses, you're going to hit resistance. They're just getting it to get on campus. Meanwhile, the investigation into the assassination of Charlie continues. And this story emerged this week of FBI Director Kash Patel pushing back at Joe Kent, who's the United States National Counterterrorism Director, because he wanted to find out how the investigation was going. Number one, did you hear about that? Number two is, how is the investigation going? Have they been keeping you abreast?
Yeah, I mean, first I got to say, you know, it's an ongoing investigation. There's only so much I can say, right? And I'm not next of kin. But I will tell you that there is an amazing team that has been assembled that are working directly with Erica. And the team is amazing. And they are working directly with federal, state, and local law enforcement. And they feel very, very good about the case. I can just tell you the confidence is brimming. I think it's watertight, rock solid. So I'm personally heartened by that. It doesn't mean that we don't want to keep making sure that we leave no stone unturned, right? Who else knew about this? Who else was involved? Were organizations involved that radicalized him? Or did people know in advance and they failed to inform law enforcement? And yeah, I saw this story and, you know, I checked into it. I'm told it's completely false, that there is an ongoing investigation. Nothing's been closed or turned off. I'm also told that nothing has been, you know, highlighted that would indicate there's foreign involvement at this point. But everybody's and I can just say this from top to bottom, everybody is completely devoted to getting justice for Charlie and for Erica and the family. And so I take a lot of I'm very heartened by that, I will tell you.
Got about a minute left, but I can't go anywhere without someone telling me some type of theory, conspiracy theory. You must get it constantly. What do you say? These are some people that are friends of yours with conspiracy theories. What do you say to those people?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Brian, I take it. It can be frustrating, there's no doubt, in the short term. But in a larger sense, I understand that there's a lot of trust issues when it comes to authorities. And I think that everybody grieves differently, right? And these are some of these people really love Charlie. Some of these people really just want to get to the truth. And I would just say, you know, my one pushback is just know that some of this does hurt the people closest to Charlie. And we want to protect them and their families, too, because sometimes when you put that stuff out on the Internet, it can come back in a really not so good way. But we want justice more than anybody, I can tell you.
And I will say, I trust the very few people on the planet I trust more than Kash Patel and Dan Bongino. Lastly, is it true that Turning Point is considering an alternate halftime show instead of Bad Bunny? Are you considering doing this? Is this true?
Yeah, no, we're doing it, Brian. This is 100% happening. We're talking with major venues right now, and a day doesn't go by where I don't see somebody saying, "Oh, here's the list of performers," "It's not happening because we couldn't get performers." Both of those stories are untrue. We are in talks with a lot of amazing acts right now, so it is happening. Stay tuned.
I know Charlie just put you in that seat to help him out, but you're doing a great job hosting his podcast. I salute all the affiliates that are holding on to the Charlie Kirk Show, and you follow me in a lot of markets, and it's great. Andrew, great to see you. Doing a fantastic job.
Thanks, Brian.
Very difficult time. Got it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Meanwhile, next, only on One Nation, comedian Joe Mackey is here with the media moments that matter to him.
Milo's been missing.
Moments that matter.
All right, it's time now for North America's favorite segment. So this week I gave my only VCR, my only TV guy, to have a subscription, but it's only get one a week, to comedian Joe Mackey. And I asked you, Joe, to find the three or maybe four best media moments. Sometimes I give the assignment and people don't do it. Did you do this assignment?
I did this assignment, and I used your VCR to watch Smokey and the Bandit.
Which is fantastic. There's so many sequels, it's hard to know which one is best. And I do miss Jackie Gleason.
Me too.
Right. But I digress. What is the first thing you came up with?
Oh, did you see J.B. Pritzker on Nicole Wallace's show?
I missed it. I don't really watch the network. What's it called now?
Is it MS Now?
I'm not sure.
That doesn't sound good.
Why should I watch this?
They made a shocking claim that no Democrat has called Trump Hitler. I mean, you've seen them call Trump Hitler many times.
Of course. Can I see them claim this?
I think we have a clip of
Hit
them.
Hit play on your VCR.
Play.
I haven't suggested that Donald Trump is Hitler. I wouldn't say that.
I don't think any Democrat has.
Donald Trump would invoke Adolf Hitler.
I don't even know what to call him. I've called him so many things. But this wannabe Hitler, for sure.
Trump actually reenacting the Madison Square Garden rally in 1939 that neo-Nazis, fascists in America.
We have a Timu Hitler in the White House right now.
The tactics of Donald Trump to Mussolini and Hitler.
He is paving the way to become a Vladimir Putin or to become an Adolf Hitler.
Besides that, are there any other examples? Is he being crazy?
I thought the whole network was basically just called Trump Hitler. It's so stunning to make a lie that you know you're going to get caught at. It's right. Like when Greg says he's 5'7", and then you meet him in person, he's maybe 5'4".
5'4", yeah. And by the way, are you the one writing that bad stuff about me on the show?
I never write I write jokes about how I wish I were Brian Kilmeade.
Right.
He's such a handsome.
They always get cut from the show.
They always get cut. Greg always, snip, cutting from floor.
Now, I gave you the assignment to get three. Did you at least get to two?
We got to two here. I don't know if you saw this, but Jonathan Carl's, he's got a book out, of course. Everyone's got a book. And Jonathan Carl, he regales us with a story of how he called Trump after he won the election.
And now keep in mind, Jonathan Carl's a huge critic of Trump. He wrote a hit book on Trump. Let's say he's interesting, he's talented. But what is that like? Can we hear?
Yeah, we got a clip of that, too.
It's hit play.
I do something kind of silly. I call Donald Trump. I mean, he's just one. I mean, there's no way he's going to pick up. And he picks up. And his voice, I mean, he hadn't slept at all. I hadn't slept. I mean, he hello, oh, Jonathan. And I said, Mr. President-elect, I just want to say congratulations. And he says, on what, Jonathan? On what? On the greatest comeback victory in the history of American politics. But he wanted to hear me say the words.
Wow.
First of all, it's very strange. I've covered a lot of presidential campaigns. I've covered several presidents. There's none other that I've ever been able to call up on the phone. I mean, it's just like, I mean, you always go through. They've got people. They get hold. I mean, it's like all of that.
Yeah.
It was easier to get Donald Trump on the phone than to get the deputy press secretary for the Kamala Harris campaign.
What do you take away from that?
I don't know what to be more angry about. One, that I don't have Trump's phone number, or two, that Jonathan Carl does.
I know, it's incredible.
It's also, Trump's phone rings. Is it a world leader? Is it a family member? No, it's Jonathan Carl. Send that to text.
Right. Hey, you would think, I would say also, too, Jonathan Carl uses it for his book to sell stuff. And I didn't read this book. I'm sure it'll be successful. But the other one just painted him as really horrible, unworthy of the presidency. And the president still says, I will talk to you.
Yeah, he kind of gave a dig to Kamala. It's easier to get his press secretary, hard to get her press secretary on the phone than it was to get Trump on the phone.
Number three.
What should we do? Number three, it's the pantsless cop Zoom call.
What do you mean?
See that one?
You mean the judge and a cop on Zoom?
On Zoom, they're having some sort of hearing, and he forgot pants. Let's roll the tape.
Yes.
We have Officer Jackson. Good morning to you. Can you put your appearance on the record, please?
Yes, Officer Jackson, badge number 3919, out of the 12th precinct.
All right.
He got an Oscar camera, Judge.
You got some pants on, officer?
Sir, they're in the... No, sir.
Officer Jackson, okay, Ms. Lee, is the officer's as charged as a disorderly person, correct?
What is he thinking? Why are you still doing Zoom calls on these court hearings? Pandemic's over.
I know. You used to think that people in positions of authority were competent, but not anymore. I wear pants to bed, and this guy doesn't even put pants on for a Zoom call, and I'm much more likely to trust and believe a policeman that wears pants. That's why I always thought in Chips, Eric Estrada was the bad guy.
Absolutely. And by the way, Joe, you do go on Zoom for a lot of the writing for the monologue.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope you're wearing pants.
All the time.
Thank you.
I do them standing up.
All right. Joe, you play a valuable role with Gutfeld, despite what he tells about you. And remember, next time an anti-kill me joke pops up, you say, if you put this on the show, I quit.
I walk. That's it?
That's it, if you don't mind. Joe, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for not touching the table, too. It's only for me. Up next, the sneak peek of the week. And don't forget to follow me on social media. I'm on Rumble, Instagram, X, and Facebook. Yes, I'm bragging. Also, I have a private club. It's called the Culper Club. You can find it on Locals. Follow me there. I put great pictures up. And I'm always wearing pants. Don't move.
At Sono Bello, we believe.
All right, before we go, get ready for a brand new season of What Made America Great. It begins on November 17th. That's when it drops on Fox Nation. I take you inside places and moments that shaped our nation's history. You know that. Here's a sneak peek.
This right here is the bloodiest battlefield of the entire 18th century in all of North America.
And I believe we got our target.
By the time they got here, they were full of confidence. The type of fighting really turned the tide of the July 2nd battle.
I cannot believe I am inside the Cheyenne Mountain Complex.
A mysterious military installation.
Another reason to get America's favorite streaming service, Fox Nation. I can't wait for you to see what we've been doing for the past year. And of course, we're coming up on year 250. Sad news. That's it for us tonight. A reminder, listen and watch my radio show. We stream it on BrianKilmeadShow.com. If you're not in our family of affiliates, we have a great roster of guests coming up in this election week. And you won't want to miss tomorrow's Fox and Friends. We are now 24 hours after Fox and Friends starts until we pick a winner in New Jersey, in Virginia, and New York City, as well as some key propositions. My last message to you is very simple. Keep everything you do, keep it on Fox News. And my message to you personally is to stay within yourself. I have to go.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.